I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and as usual, it is a thrill and a privilege to be here with you, especially at this time of year. So we have the holidays going on. We have the election heating up or boiling over or fizzling out. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to look at that. But we have a whole new year coming up. It's going to be different. Is it going to be as strange as 2020? Could anything be as strange as 2020? Could you imagine a year ago, we're sitting here, we're getting ready to enjoy the holidays. We're saying, look at how much winning we have done. Winning, winning, winning. It's out of control. Next year, we're going to have an election. We're going to re-elect our president who's made our economy get into high gear. Everyone's got jobs. People got more money. The country's looking up. The military is as strong as it has ever been, if not stronger. We have everybody in our country getting jobs. It was really a wonderful thing. And 2020 is going to be even better. Now, that's where we were a year ago. Could you imagine if anybody said to you, oh, by the way, at some point, early on in 2020, there's going to be a Chinese virus that's going to come into the country, and basically everyone's going to stop going to work. People are going to be sitting home getting government checks. Not everyone, but majority. You have to decide if you are an essential worker or not. And you'd say to yourself, well, what the hell is an essential worker? Isn't every job essential to the person who has it? Isn't my job essential to me? Well, I guess we learned a lesson there, didn't we? But could you imagine they would say, well, and then it's going to continue through the whole entire year. Everyone is going to be wearing masks, not just robbers. No, not just kids wearing costumes. Everyone's going to wear a mask everywhere they go. You would have thought, I don't know, maybe you would have said, I would have been less surprised if I woke up with my tongue stapled to the rug. If you had told me that was going to happen. But it did. Oh, and then by the way, this wonderful, great president that everybody likes, well, not everybody, you and I mean, you know what I mean, the real patriots like him, with this booming economy, we're going to vote for a old Joe Biden, who's as corrupt as the day is long, who has ran for president at least two other times and had to drop out because he lied, he cheated, he was no good. He's going to end up being the president of the United States. Could you imagine if I had said that to you? I would have heard a knock on my door, and the great Malcolm Out Loud would have sent the guys with the white robes here, the white coats, to come and take me away if I had said that a year ago. But, my friends, that's where we find ourselves. We are in this very, very strange place. Donald Trump may be the president. He may not be the president. If you had to throw odds right now, you'd have to say it's probably 75 against, because the courts are not being our friends here. And when I say friends, I don't mean do the wrong thing and just side with Trump and the people who support him. I'm saying the courts did not do the right thing by us as Americans, whether you're on the right or on the left. The courts have just taken the most important issue and just thrown it away. Nope, we're not going to deal with it. We have potential, and we have potential voter fraud that happened in multiple places, but especially in these areas where we have the swing states in Georgia and in Michigan and in Pennsylvania. We have what appears to be on face value, it appears to be enough fraud, at least that we should look at it extremely closely, if not do something unprecedented, like call for a new election in those states. But instead, we couldn't get any courts to even look at it. And when they did look at it, they threw it out as nonsense. All the, you know, hundreds of affidavits, signed affidavits by people saying, hey, this is a problem. And I think there was fraud. I had my boss telling me to backdate things. I had supervisors telling me to fill out parts of ballots. That's all illegal. That's all improper. There's no way any of that should have been allowed. But it was, and it was ignored. And now we have a result that seems about as flawed as it possibly could be, but we're going with it, because our only resort was finally the Supreme Court. We're going to go to the Supreme Court. where the justices there are not concerned. See, they have lifetime appointments, so they're not worried about politics. They're not worried about their paycheck. They're not worried about voting the popular way. They're simply going to look at the issue based on the Constitution of the United States and make a decision. And instead, we started hearing rumors that only a couple of the justices really thought there was anything to worry about here, that they may not even take it. And then they decided to look at the Pennsylvania case. They decided not to look at the Pennsylvania case. We're not even going to look at that. Then, the big thing was the state versus state, the Texas lawsuit against the other states that were joined by, 15, 16 other states in our union, said this was wrong, what happened, this damaged all of us. You had 106 congressmen jump on board and say, this isn't right, what just happened here. It still may come out in favor of Biden, but just what happened is not right. We can't allow this to go on to the next election. We have to fix this. And the court basically just punts and says, no, we're not going to deal with it. So basically, they have now said that states can ignore their own constitutions. You have governors and judges can change election rules regardless of what the Constitution in each state says. That devalues the Constitution in each one of those states, and that devalues the rule of law across the entire land of the United States. And our Supreme Court has let us down. They should have at least had hearings on this, brought out all the issues. Let's talk about it. Let's look at the evidence. Instead, based on the briefs that they were given, they decided, not enough here. Not enough, which I have to bring up the question. I've asked it before. How much voter fraud is okay? How much is okay before it's a problem? Well, obviously, a lot. I mean, you could say forever that, there is no voter fraud, but we saw hundreds of incidents of people putting their name on legal documents and saying, I saw improprieties, right? You're seeing these machines, these Dominion machines that, I don't know, maybe they purposely gave results that were not what we had hoped for, or maybe they were totally legitimate. But you got these states wanting to, dump the hard drives, get rid of all of that, get rid of the evidence before anybody could look at it. If I'm not mistaken, I believe in Michigan there was a lawsuit where a person came forward and said, I'm challenging those machines. And the court said, okay, we're going to allow those machines to be examined by professionals. And they did examine, I think, 23 out of 36 machines. And you know what we found out about those machines? I have no idea, because the court has said you can't reveal what you found out about the machines. What the hell is that? What was the purpose of having them examined? If we don't know, imagine if it came out the machines were perfect. Wouldn't that be a good thing to know? At least you'd say, okay, then I guess the machines were not a part of the problem. But to say that, no, we can't find out the results of what they found out in their review of these machines, why would you keep that from people? Why would you say that we can't have that information? Do you see, there's a bigger theme going on in America today, and that is limiting information. Limiting our information, the information we're allowed to have, the information we're allowed to pass out, the information we're allowed to digest. We're only allowed to digest the information that the authorities believe we should get. And I include authorities there, our social media people that are running social media. Now, I guess we could have a whole conversation about that. You do not have to be a part of social media. You don't have to be part of Facebook or Twitter. You don't have to join any of them. Nor do you have to get your information from any of them. You don't have to partake in any of that. So the fact that they don't want to put out a story about the New York Post, okay, well, I'll go read the New York Post if I want to get that information. But I see the bigger picture. They have transcended simply a social media company. They have transcended, it's become part of everyday life in America, and that is why, and I'm against regulation in most cases, but in a case like this that has to do with free speech, where whether people should or shouldn't get their information from these sources, we know that many of our brother and sister citizens do get their information primarily from Facebook and from Twitter and from these other social media sites. And if that information is twisted, if it's not true, if it's untruth, if it's fake, then those sites should be regulated to make sure that they're not a propaganda machine for one side or the other. You know, I'm not saying this is one-sided. Neither side should be able to control it, because you can guarantee if the Republicans were in control of these media sites, there would be hell to pay. They'd be shut down immediately because, you know, the press would pound the pavement, scream and holler to politicians. You know, the ones who actually do fight, you know, the Democrats, they actually do fight. They come out and they circle the wagons. They make their case. They don't care what anybody thinks. They do it. Not like our Republican friends who really lack backbone in most cases. Not all. There's some awesome people out there. But for the majority of our Republican Party, they're not fighters. In fact, they didn't like Trump. They're never Trumpers in the Republican Party. They didn't like Trump because he fought. You know, so does he have to fight on every issue? What the hell does that mean? If it's a bad issue, if you and me as the American citizen are getting screwed over here because these other politicians are doing the wrong thing, yes, you fight on every single issue. That's what I want in my president. I want him to stand up for the American people, not one party or the other, the American people. Do you see? That's a big difference. I am not... I lean one way or another because of how I believe things should be. I don't think we should govern because that's just how Joe thinks. We should go by the Constitution. I just happen to think that, you know, those of us who are more conservative favor the Constitution more. We lean that way, and the Constitution is part of what we see as the most important guiding tool for the rule of law, as opposed to our friends on the left who clearly see today that the Constitution is a restrictive document that keeps them from doing the things they want. I just have to say to everybody, you have to ask the question, what is it that they want? What is the Constitution keeping them from doing, right? So that was a long way around the horn there, Chasing Justice family. But the reality is we're in a strange place here as we get ready to click into a new year. And what will 2021 bring to us? You know, I guess there's still a chance that this election could change, and I guess I don't know how. I mean, I see the president out there and some of his his team are still saying, well, there's another chance here. I don't see any other chance. The Supreme Court has now said no. I don't see anyone else going to step up and do anything. I don't see the representatives in each state delegation saying, you know, this didn't go right. We're going to use our Constitution and we're going to take it back ourselves, which is the only thing really I think that's left, is that the state representatives could say to themselves, you know, we think that the election was fraudulent and we're going to take it back and we're going to vote within our own caucus and decide, you know, where our electors go. Does anybody think that the Republican caucuses out there have the guts and the backbone to do that? Do you think that? This is, we're having that conversation around here, around the old Lieutenant Joe homestead here. And, you know, there are some people who are very hopeful that people are going to do the right thing. They are going to step up at the last minute and they're going to do the right thing. I just have to say, well, how come we haven't heard from them? If they're going to be that brave to do that, why don't we hear them standing on the steps of their Capitol saying, this is enough. We're taking this back. We are going to vote because we think there's so much fraud. Where are they demanding to see the machines and see the ballots? Where are these Republican governors demanding to see that? Oh no. A lot of them allowed the rules to be changed, allowed the constitutional issues to just be washed over. And we're just going to have to deal with old Joe. It'll all be fine. It's not much difference between Republicans, Democrats anyway. Isn't that what I want you to believe? Isn't that what they want us to think? That, you know, now we're going to get some stability back with a guy like Joe Biden, you know, who's tried and true, who's been around the Senate for 40 years. You know, this is a guy that's going to, he's going to reach across the aisle and he's going to work with Republicans. Does anybody think they're going to stop abortion? How are you going to reach across the aisle on that one? What are we going to, oh, how about we just don't do last minute abortion, right? Or late term abortion. No, you think they're going to, they're probably not going to do that one. Well, then they're going to come up with, at least when young people want an abortion, they have to notify their parents, right? They would, Yeah, no, they're probably not going to reach across the aisle on that. So that one, they're probably not going to reach across the aisle on. But, you know, hey, when it comes to your Second Amendment rights, you know, they're probably going to realize that all of this rhetoric about taking guns and this and that, let's do away with that. Let's figure out, you know, how do we safely make sure that people who have mental illness or whatever shouldn't have guns? I think we all agree with that. So let's figure out a way so to make sure people can still get their weapons that they want. And the, they're probably going to do something other than that. They really don't want you to have your guns. They're going to put people in charge that are going to send the police to your house to pull the guns out of your house because you shouldn't have them. So he's probably not going to reach across the aisle on that one. All right, so that's just two issues, not a big deal. Now, on border security and fixing our immigration policy. Now, we all want good and decent people to come to America, to bring us people from all different walks of life, to make our American family as strong and as wonderful as we can make it. We want people to emigrate to the country that are going to help our country be better, right? We have a wall there. We have a border to prevent people just pouring across the border so that we have a rule of law, so that it's done properly, so that it's done safely. And I know he's going to reach out. Well, actually, he said something about ripping down the wall and just allowing anybody to come across the country and give everybody benefits and do whatever. So maybe there's three things they're not really going to reach out. He's not going to reach out, across the aisle and do anything with. I know what he'll reach out across the aisle and he'll do climate change, right? He'll talk to us about climate change, and as long as we agree with him, then we will, we will have an agreement, and then we can say we reached out. I mean, he reached out across the aisle and had an agreement. I don't think you're going to find a lot of agreement there. See, so this is a long way of making an example, is that, you know, reaching across the aisle is great when there's things we have in common. When we are so diametrically opposed on some of these issues, like life and the right to bear arms and the right to a safe and secure border, when we are so split down the middle in our country, that how do you negotiate on that? How does a pro-life person say, well, I guess some abortion is okay, right? Isn't that compromise? I'll allow some abortion. And as opposed to somebody who wants to kill the baby after it's born, infanticide. Where do they come together? How do these two sides meet on that issue? I don't see it. How do people say you don't deserve to have a gun, you should take all your guns away, and other people saying I should have all the guns I want? Well, where do you come together? I guess I can have some of the guns I want and I'll give up some of my guns, or I can only buy one and you say none. And how do you come together on that issue? Where's the connection there? I don't understand this. You know, we can't secure our border because half of our country wants us to just be an open border country where people from anywhere just come pouring in and take advantage of what America has, because that's fair, that's good, that's nice, right? Never mind what it means to the economy, to the people who are working, to people's livelihoods, their property, their jobs. None of that matters. You must just be a hater if you don't want that to happen. I don't know. How do we reach across an aisle and settle these issues? How do we come together and compromise on these kind of things? I don't know. You know, as my Chasing Justice audience, you will know, a while back, I discussed and wrote an article on the AmericaOutloud.com platform about maybe it's time for two Americas. Maybe that's something we should think about. You know, all the conservative people go to the South, the liberal people go to the North. We have two countries and we have, we have a relationship that way. You do what you want. You do it, tax yourselves to death however you want to do it in the North. Open borders. Let everybody go there. Give everybody all your money. You can do that. And in the South, we'll do something different. Now, I wrote about that. I did a radio show on it. We did a column on it. You can go find it in there. It's on the podcast. But the other day, Rush Limbaugh came out with it. And I love Uncle Rush. You know, that's who he was around here for my kids, Uncle Rush. Uncle Rush said maybe that might happen. And a guy in Texas, one of the politicians in Texas, put out a bill. It said maybe it's time for Texas to be its own country again. Let's think about that for a minute. We'll be back with more Chasing Justice in a minute.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, my friends, here to round two of Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we're just getting started here for today. You know, it's really nice, this afternoon time we get together, because, you know, it's not quite dinner time, it's not quite cocktail time, but it's after lunch. You've had a time to think. A lot of people are driving, you're going different places, so I love being here at 3 o'clock every weekday. I think this is really a good time. So, where do we leave off? And I know I get going. I get going on a roll, and I get a lot of ideas popping out here, and I do appreciate you all listening. I want to talk a little bit for a few minutes about a program we did last week when I talked about compassion, the role and place of compassion, and a concern I was having about an individual that I was part of in law enforcement, where he was arrested and charged with a bunch of street crimes, and he was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Well, since the time I did that show, I spoke to the prosecutor who was involved, and his initial reaction after listening to my concern was, hey, listen, you got to understand, this guy was a guy who was probably on a path to do other bad things down the road. He had demonstrated time after time, crime after crime, that he was dangerous, and he was getting more dangerous as he went, and he probably would end up hurting somebody. So you know what? He's right where he needs to be. And I said, okay, I can understand that. As I said that in that episode, this is not about being a softy or a squeeze or a mush. This is about trying to understand, you know, the value of the punishment. Okay? A murderer gets 30 years and they get out in 30 years or less. This guy's been in 24 years already, and he's going to, you know, he's only 50 now. He could live to 85, another 35 years. He could do 60 years for stealing some coats and jackets and extorting people by scaring them. I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's right. And that's all I'm wrestling with. That's all I'm wrestling. You know, somebody who did three violent crimes and cut people, stabbed people, shot people, they can stay in prison forever. Those people deserve to be there. That's, you know, violent, physical violent crimes like that. You know, I would say that's not a problem. This guy, this one's a little different. And that's why I'm thinking about it. That's why it's going through my head. So I just want to tell you about some of the reactions that I've had. After talking to this prosecutor, we went back and forth a few times. And then his final answer was, listen, I wouldn't be offended if he got out. You know, I made him a great offer. He wouldn't take it. But I wouldn't be offended if he got out. So him and I are going to have more conversations, you know, this prosecutor and I. We're going to talk about what I can do. I reached out to a friend of mine who's a warden in a prison. And he said, hey, listen, reach out to the prison. They'll tell you what the guy's like. Tell you how he's been for the last 24 years. Is he turned his life around? Is he a good guy? Maybe he is. Maybe he's somebody worth a couple of more thoughts on your part about what you could or couldn't do to do anything about this, which again, I don't know that I could do anything about it. You know, I'm nothing. I'm a nobody. I can't change state law. I can't, you know, get anybody out of prison. The only thing I could do is I could bring it to people's attention, which is what I'm trying to do here. I think we should think about this, you know, in an age where we're looking at prison reform, where we're looking at fairness, we're looking at equity. You know, this might be the moment to have that conversation. I think the three strikes and you're out law was created for a reason, to stop violent criminals from repeating over and over and over and hurting more and more people. And I still agree with that. If somebody has let us know, who was it? The great Bob Grant of American radio used to say, when somebody tells you who they are, listen to them. Okay? So when these criminals commit violent crime after violent crime after violent crime, there has to be a time when we as the people say, that's enough. You're not hurting us anymore, and put them away. But I don't know if somebody who did what this guy did, you know, my guy John, I don't know if what John did deserves his entire life in prison. I just don't know. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. And I got to say, some people have reached out to my Twitter, at Pangaro Global. They sent me messages, and I've also gotten emails, jpangaro@americaoutloud.com, where they gave me their opinion. And I'm asking for your opinion. You know, I trust this audience. You're good, decent people. You know, what do you think? I mean, should there be any compassion in this, or am I wrong? So I recently had another conversation with somebody that I trust implicitly. And that's one of my partners. One of my partners while I was in the police work. And at one point, my partner had an incident where he had stopped a car and a guy jumped out of the car and was running. And he ran behind a motel and my partner was chasing him. And as the guy got to, there was a little creek behind the motel. And this guy stopped and he turned around. And as he pulled out of his pocket, he had a metal bar. And he tried to fight with my partner. He tried to hit him with this metal bar. And he tried to grab his gun. Well, my partner pushed him off. The guy got up and kept running. And at some point, he stopped. And he turns around again, reaching behind his back. And my partner, fearing that the guy had a gun now, he already tried to hit him with a bar and that didn't work, that now he had a gun, he wheels around and my partner let a round go, took a shot at the guy. And, you know, thankfully, well, I don't know, you listen to the rest of the story and say if it's thankfully or not. He missed the guy. The guy took off, made it through the woods and disappeared. He was captured probably a week later. We got some information who he was. He was captured under arrest and brought back. When he spoke to the detectives about this incident, he had said, hey, listen, I got to be honest with you. That cop was in the right to throw a shot at me because I tried to hit him. And I had a bag of Coke in my pocket. I had 2 ounces of Coke I was trying to dump in the creek. And when I reached behind my back and he saw that, he goes, if it was me, I would have thought I had a gun too. Which was okay because the shoot came out good. And the guy said and did the right thing there, right? He told the truth, right? That was good for my partner. The guy did, I think, 4 or 5 years in jail for that incident. And then he got out and he went to California. And while he was in California, he knocked a young woman off a horse. She was riding in a park in California, riding her horse. He knocked her off the horse. He raped and murdered her. And left her there in the woods. And the prosecutors out there went through his criminal history when they caught the guy. And, of course, they call my partner and say, hey, what happened? And he tells them the story. And then, you know, they sentenced him to whatever they did in California. But my partner is relating this story to me. And he goes, now, listen, I'm not saying your guy, John, right, wrong, or indifferent, did too much time, didn't do enough time, should stay forever and get out. I'm just simply saying this. You know, that guy that fought with me, if he had been killed then, he wouldn't have raped or murdered that girl and left her in the woods dead. But instead, he didn't. And he went on to do something even worse, even more horrific than what he did with me. He raped and murdered a girl and took her life and left her in the woods. He says, now what's that guy deserve? Right? It wouldn't have been better if he had gotten his just rewards earlier, then that girl would still be alive. And that's one of the things that I had said about John, is that if I had the power and I made the decision to say, I really should let somebody know my feelings on this, and the prosecutor agrees, and we should all go forward and say, you know, this is enough time for this guy. He did low-level street robberies. He didn't hurt anybody. And we think he should get out. And then if by some miracle, somehow or other, he was let out. Let's just say he's let out. The world twists weird. And this guy is let out. And then he goes and hurts somebody else. He does something terrible. He rapes and murders somebody and leaves them dead in the woods. How would I feel about that? If I had just left well enough alone, he would suffer in his jail cell till he died, maybe another 35 years. But that victim would be okay. Now, I don't have any idea that he would ever do that. I don't know. There is no victim out there. But this is one of the difficult things about soul searching and trying to figure out, when you're part of this system, you know, how do you do the right thing? How do you know? Does anybody have a crystal ball? Nobody does. So that's why it is such a soul-searching moment for me. And now I have the prosecutor involved. I have my partner involved. We have my wife and everybody in the family here has opinions about what's going on. I've talked to some other people who are encouraging me to do whatever you can. That's too long. He should get out. And other people are telling me, hey, don't go soft, man. He did bad stuff. He should stay in there. So it's really a microcosm of our society is what I'm seeing here in this tug of war over what's right and what's wrong with this young man and what I should potentially do or not do as we go forward. But I just wanted to update everybody on that because I did get some messages and a couple of emails, and I know people that listen to the show that know me personally weighed in with their opinions, and I really appreciated it. It's one of those things in life, you know, you get to a point, I guess, where you start to say, what is it all about? And where do I fit in here? And can I even do anything about this? You know, do I make the world better or worse by doing anything? You know, by the first time around, did I make it better or worse by taking this guy off the street? I think it's pretty obvious that you can make a case. It was good. It was for the good of the world. He was a bad guy. He was getting out of control. He probably would have hurt some people pretty bad. But that was back then. That was a long time ago. That was many years ago. You know, are you the same person you were 24 years ago? Are you that same person? Or do you think maybe you may have changed? Well, I suppose the argument could be made that people could change for the worse over time, right? They could change for the worse, and he was a bad guy going in, and he's even worse coming out. And guess what you unleashed on everybody there, Lieutenant Joe? Isn't that something? So I guess it's kind of a good thing I don't have the power. I just need to think about it more. You know, I will make a decision. I'm not an indecisive person. But this is not just a decision of to do this or do that. This is soul searching. This is understanding ethics, morality, my religion, what I should do, my place in the world. There's a lot here to dig into, and I'm trying. You know, that's what I'm going to encourage everybody to do. You know, don't be afraid of things you have to figure out. Dig in and figure out what's going on, and that's kind of what I'm doing here. So I appreciate you listening to my journey, being a part of it, and like I said, I'd love to hear from people. At Pangaro Global is our Twitter. You can also reach us at jpangaro@americaoutloud.com, and let me know what you think. What's your opinion? If you were the judge and you heard my story, what would be your result? What ruling would you make on our friend young John? Would he get out or would he stay there for the rest of his life? So that's where I'm going to leave that. Well, we're going to stay on law and order for a minute, even though we're going to, you know, step off of that. There's a guy out there. You may remember his name. Prosecutor Durham. Remember him? You know, Attorney General Barr appointed him to look into, you know, the whole collusion nonsense investigation, the coup d'etat against President Trump that took place. You know, 4 or 5 years ago started. Yeah, where is that right now? What's going on with that? It's the election has come and gone. We still haven't heard. How come we haven't had a preliminary briefing? Why wouldn't we at least have had that information for us to know what's going on? Now, I have said all along that I hope that Attorney General Barr and his team do the right thing. If people did criminal acts, if they acted beyond the scope of their power, if it was a coup d'etat, then they should be held accountable for their actions, because that shouldn't happen to anybody. It shouldn't happen to a Donald Trump. It shouldn't happen to a Joe Biden. It shouldn't happen to a Barack Obama. It shouldn't happen to any American citizen running for office, or any American citizen that is elected to office should not be treated that way. When I look at that investigation, I say to myself, here I am, seeing what I see, again, prima facie case that things went wrong. We have an FBI agent pleading guilty to faking up a FISA warrant so they could continue spying. But we see nobody else. All we hear is investigation still ongoing. We're still looking at things. You know, recently I heard Mr. Durham is bringing on more prosecutors because he's really making progress in this case. Is there a grand jury? Is there a grand jury going on out there? If there's a grand jury, you'd think you'd have a criminal investigation because there's facts to bring to the grand jury so that they can make a decision to indict or not indict. Is something a crime or not a crime? But nothing. We hear nothing. As we approach a new year, a new era, a new presidency, we have no idea what happened with the last one. Nobody held to account. no lessons learned, and now we have what appears to be a fraudulent election, or at least a lot of fraud in the election, and our courts have now abandoned us. They won't even look at this case and do an investigation. I would think, now maybe I'm way off base here because I'm not a Supreme Court justice, but I've been involved with the law system for a long time. I would think that those justices, all of them, and regardless what the weak John Roberts says, there's no Republican judges, there's no Democrat judges. It's clear to everybody else in the whole country. Of course there are. That's why they fight over them so much, of who's going to be appointed. That regardless if you're on the left or you're on the right, the position that the Supreme Court holds in our nation and the responsibility of each and every one of those justices is to make sure that the Constitution is the guiding rule of law in everything that we do. Regardless of political affiliation, regardless of how you believe the world should be or not be, your job, your responsibility as a justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is to uphold that Constitution and let the chips fall wherever they may. They could easily come out and say, we're going to do an investigation. Now you'd say, well, that's not within the purview of the Supreme Court. Well, who's to say it's not? Who's going to say that they can't do it? What court do you take that to say they couldn't do it? Oh, I guess the Congress could, come after them. And that would get political because the Congress, you know, depending on which side of the Congress is going to get burnt when they do their investigation. And if they're in power, they would vote that they shouldn't do that. But wouldn't that have been the best outcome for all of us to say, hey, listen, there's a prima facie case here, which means it looks like more likely than not there was some fraud here. And we can't have fraud in an American election. We can't have half the country walking around feeling like they got robbed. It's one thing to lose fair and square. You lick your wounds and you move on. Hey, we lost. The people want to do the other thing. They don't want to do the things I think we should do. That's okay. That's how it goes. That's as long as it's fair and square, I can live with that because that's how it works. Now I have to come up with a better candidate, better ideas. I have to try and persuade you that my way is the better way. But for somebody to come in and steal how it goes, that's how dictatorships work. That's how third world countries work. That's not how the United States of America works. And that, if you are on that court, that has to be the overriding thought you have in your head. Because when you demean that, you demean that Constitution because it stands for nothing then. If the Constitution doesn't stand for everything, then it doesn't stand for anything. There's not a little bit of the Constitution or a little bit of constitutionality. It's either constitutional or it isn't. It was either fair or it wasn't. And that's what I had hoped from our Supreme Court. That's what I held out for. You know, I would like to say, gee, my side wins. But if the court looked at it fairly, and an investigation was done fairly, openly, and honestly, transparently, that we can all see, hey, that's not how it went. People just wanted Joe Biden and they wanted to go backwards in how things were. Well, that's how it went. I would accept that. What I can't accept is that this is a nightmare that we can't wake up from, that we've been robbed, that people committed a coup d'etat and we're not allowed to talk about it or know about it, that they tried to steal and did steal this election and we're not allowed to know about it, we're not allowed to talk about it. Just take your lumps and sit down and shut up and do what you're told. Is that the America we want to live in, right or left? We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. On to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
All right, all right, all right, all right. My ode to Matthew McConaughey. Not that I know Matthew, nor do I follow him around or have any kind of a relationship with him whatsoever, other than I like that saying. All right, all right, all right, right? Although recently he did come out and say something about the people on the left and how they're not given the same response they did when Trump won, and how they refused to accept that election. And now they're making a big deal out of, you better accept it and call Biden. You better call him president-elect. Even Mr. Wallace, right, from Fox News, didn't he come out? Wasn't he yelling at somebody on the news and saying, he said, Mr. Biden? He goes, that's president-elect Biden. No, Mr. Biden, Mr. President-elect Biden. Well, he's not declared president-elect by the news media. He's declared president-elect when the college gets together and determines who the electors voted for, then you're called president-elect. Now, historically, of course, when somebody wins by a landslide or they win by a lot and the other guy concedes or the other girl concedes and gives in, okay, then you get away with everybody accepts that you call them president-elect, because at that point, the other person you were against, conceded, gave in. Yeah, you won. In this case, President Trump has not conceded. Therefore, until the Electoral College speaks or the courts finally speak in their absolute final way, he is not the president-elect yet. He's the president-elect, obvious, maybe, but certainly he doesn't get the designation. So where are we going next? We talked about Mr. Durham and that situation. How about Hunter Biden? Oh, we have heard about, hello, Hunter. Hunter Biden. What did Hunter do? Did Hunter do anything wrong? Are we making a big deal out of this guy for nothing? Are we going after him just because we don't like the fact that his father won the presidency? Or did he actually do things that he should be held account for? Now, people do things all the time. Lots of people do things. People you probably know do things they shouldn't do. And they don't get caught. And no, it's really no harm, no foul. Now, maybe in real life, there could be some foul to some people. But in general, it's not like robbing somebody, hitting them over the head. They do things inappropriately. And it's no harm, no foul. People make money in ways that they shouldn't make money, but they do. And no harm, no foul. This kid, apparently, I call him kid. He's probably my age, if not a little older. Anyway, he comes out. And he had all these business deals behind the thing, and it looks like he's dealing with governments, and he's selling it access to his father and all that. And it's reported recently that maybe his $400,000 in income he didn't report. Okay, now that's a lot of money to not report. I mean, it's one thing to, report it, but, come up with schemes to write off some of it, but to not report it, I guess that's kind of the problem, is that that's a lot of money, $400,000. Did he do that on purpose, or was it a mistake? I mean, people make mistakes when they do these things, to sit back and go, because you're not involved with $400,000, to say, there's no way I would $400,000, you don't know. People have accountants that could have made a mistake. There could be, what I'm saying is, there could be a reason other than him being criminal that this $400,000 is in question. That's all I'm saying. You get the benefit of the doubt here in America, and then you do an investigation and you find out. But has he done other things? Did he sell influence to his father? Was he on those boards, the Burisma board and all these other places that he's been on, only because of who his father is, and therefore he has access to his father? That is something that affects all of us. That is something that affects you and me. Because can you do that? How about if you call Burisma right now and say, listen, I don't know Joe Biden, but I'd really like to be on the board of a gas company, but I don't need $80,000 a month like Hunter got. How about $5,000 a month? And I'll give you advice. I'll tell you about using gas and who needs gas. I can give you the same information as him, because he admitted he really had no experience in any of that business, but they wanted him on the board. Well, I'm a nice guy. I'd like to be on the board. I'll take only $5,000 a month. You think they're going to hire me? They're going to say, that'd be great to have a good American person on the board. They can give us their opinion. Really? No. Again, on face value, prima facie, there's a case here that he was selling influence and connection to his father. And that harms all of us, you and me. Each and every one of us are harmed by that situation. Oh, look at that. Some people are reaching out to me already. So, hey, thank you, people. I appreciate that. It's an interruption to my show here, but I appreciate the fact that you're reaching out already. All right, so what do we do with this Joe Biden thing? Will there be an investigation? Should President Trump instruct his attorney general, which he has every right to do, the president controls the Department of Justice, should he go to him and say, here's what I want. I want another special prosecutor to investigate Hunter Biden and whether or not he used influence on his father. We want to see if his father got any money, if Joe Biden is corrupted in any way, if he is, well, just like they did with Trump, only this would be for real. Is he in the pocket of the communists in China? Should we be concerned that he will vote certain ways, or he will come up with certain programs or do certain things because he's beholden to the Chinese? Do the Chinese have information on him that they could blackmail him with? Isn't that what they said about Trump? Isn't that what the whole thing was about? That they had stuff they could blackmail, and therefore he would do things that Putin wanted. Well, what about Biden? Here we have clear prima facie evidence, not rumor, not innuendo, not anonymous this, that, or the other thing. We have actual evidence that this is the case. We have actual evidence. Shouldn't we do the investigation? So, should the president say, Attorney General Barr, I'm ordering you to appoint a special prosecutor immediately to look into the Hunter Biden situation and whether or not Joseph Biden received any money through any of those deals, right? Isn't that something he should do? Then, how about another special prosecutor? We think, it seems to be, there's prima facie case that our intelligence agencies were corrupted by the previous administration, and they engaged in inappropriate activities. Now, maybe that's what he's looking at in the first, in the Durham investigation, but I'd add an extra one specifically for the intelligence agencies, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, all these different intelligence agencies that were involved in this, the ambassadors, everybody. And so I want an investigation done deeply into those groups to see exactly what they knew. And further, as the President of the United States to assist in this matter, I am signing an executive order immediately directing the heads of every one of those agencies to turn over each and every single report immediately, redacted or not, to the Department of Justice and their investigators immediately. Matter of fact, the head of those organizations are to be in my office tomorrow morning, where I will personally give them that order. Wouldn't that be a good one? Wouldn't you like to hear that one? And I got one more. I got another one. Now, you can say what you want. The next president could fire each and every one of these people. And if he did, to protect himself, to protect those around him, to protect corrupt people, the media would applaud because most of them would be in his party. They would be his friends. They'd be connected to this swamp in some way or another. And they would applaud it, and that would be the end of it. And that's the power of the media. But I would make it difficult for them. And here's the last one I would come up with. I would call in the Attorney General and I'd say, you are to immediately appoint Rudy Giuliani. Now, it doesn't have to be Giuliani, but you know that would just make their heads explode. You have to appoint Rudy Giuliani as a special prosecutor, and his job is to look into every single member of Congress to see where they've gotten their money from. Compare their salaries for as long as they've been in the Congress, and I want to see every nickel and dime where it's come from to see if it's corrupt or not, if they've taken bribes, if they've been part of insider trading, if they've been a part of a scam, if they've sold influence. I want to know that, and I want you to hire a special prosecutor to look into it, and I think we should look at both sides, but we're going to start with the leadership in the House. You are to immediately look at Speaker Pelosi and her dealings, and then work your way through. And that's my order as President of the United States, because we want to get to the bottom of this. We want to make sure that Congress is transparent and honest and honorable and doing the work of the people and not doing the work of their own bank accounts. Wouldn't you like to see those three appointments? I wonder what else we would appoint going out the door. President Joe, you're going out the door in 30 days. Who else do you think should be properly investigated? Let's see. I'll give that one some thought. and I'll get back to you on it. But wouldn't you like to see those three appointments of special prosecutors? Wouldn't you like to finally get to the bottom of that? Oh, here's one. Here's one. Mr. Attorney General, you are to immediately appoint a special prosecutor who's going to look into anti-American groups. Now, I'm not saying communists like they did back in the 50s. I'm talking about that. You are to look into Antifa and see who they are. How are they funded? They're a violent group. Matter of fact, let's name them a terrorist group going out the door. All right, let's investigate those groups. Let's investigate the white supremacist groups. Matter of fact, Attorney General, you are to appoint three special prosecutors to look at all these hate groups. Each and every one of them are to be investigated thoroughly and completely. And I want a report in a year. If you don't have your complete report within a year, I expect some type of a preliminary report so we at least know what's going on. And you'll answer questions for the American people. You see, I could get myself lost in this. How exciting would that be? How exciting would it be to force those people in power to have to answer for what they do? Because you know what? If you do anything, you, my friend out there in Chasing Justice Land, you are going to have to answer for it. You don't get to smash up your phones, burn your hard drives, get rid of all the information, get rid of your emails. You don't get to do any of that. You get to go to prison if you do that. Wouldn't it be nice to see the tables turned on these people who say they represent you and me, who say they're as good as the wind-driven snow. They're pure, pure, unbelievable people, and you are just the peasants. Now, I'm getting myself all worked up here, but there's a reason behind it. There's a reason behind my thoughts. The reality is that we live in an America that is different than the America that was originally built. The America that was originally built, and I'm not talking about the warts part, so all you people that are jumping up and down, go, we had sin in the beginning. Yes, I'm not talking about that, right? We're fixing that. We have fixed that. People have died to fix that. We're trying to fix things that were bad in the beginning. What was good in the beginning is that we were set up to be a constitutional republic where the people had the power, not the politicians. Where home rule, where your state would rule and your community would rule, how you lived, what laws you put into place, how you could raise your family, the things you could do. That's how we were founded. Those were the good things. Do we have that now? Is that the America we are today? If you can't say that it is, why isn't it? Why isn't it? Well, I'll tell you one of the reasons. Is that we have a tendency here not to believe what we're seeing in front of our eyes. You know, I just had this conversation recently with Miss Kathy, my wife. We were sitting there talking about this, and we had Jim Giordano. You know, Jim, from the neighborhood. Jim was talking to me about it, and he says, "You know what? If they continue to do this and flout the Constitution, I'll do whatever I have to do to protect the Constitution and save America." And I said, "Jim, I believe in your heart. You believe you would do that, like lots of people. I think lots of people believe they would do the right thing. Unfortunately, when it comes down to it, to brass tacks, to rubber meeting the road, whatever other, funny word puzzle you want to put together, when it comes down to it, are you actually going to fight back? Are you going to put your job and your livelihood and your family and your freedom on the line? Are you actually going to do that? Or is that something that we just kind of talk about doing, but when it comes time to it, you know, I don't know. That's why we're not out in the street protesting. Why aren't we out in the street protesting and you know, showing our anger and doing that? Why aren't we doing that? Because we got to go to work. Even if we're working from home, we got to go to work. We got to take care of our families because none of us are really prepared to pledge our honor, our fortunes, our very lives to the matter of freedom and justice. We talk a good game. But we are certainly like a bunch of frogs in the pot, and the water has been warming up for a long time. Only now, unfortunately, it's getting ready to boil, and it may be too late for us to get out of this pot. So my goal for the next year was to be positive. Now, I told you that. You're probably saying, "Lieutenant Joe, that don't sound too positive." The first step to being positive, I think, is to understand where you really stand. Not where you hope you stand, not really what you hope you would think or what you hope the situation would be. What is it real? You can't act act from a place of hope. You have to act from a place of reality. So like another one of the great guys that I like to listen to out there, Mr. Rush Limbaugh, when he says all the time, he's the mayor of Realville. Well, he is the mayor of Realville, and that's where I'm talking about. You have to know where you really are, what you're really willing to do, what the stakes really could be for you, and then how do you backfill that? So I say to my friend Jim, and I say lots and lots of other people, you know, probably myself included, we're going to lose this freedom and liberty that we take so seriously, that we love so much. We're watching it slip out from our fingers right now. We're watching all of our institutions fail us, our politicians, our media, our courts. They are all failing us. America is being taken away from us. And all we can do is yell and scream and holler and say what we would do. But when it comes down to it, we haven't really done anything. Because it could be too costly to do it. That's real. You go out and scream and holler, you probably lose your job. You take a stand against this election? Well, we know if you're a reporter or you're some kind of a journalist and you take a stand and you want to do a Pulitzer Prize winning story, if you had all the evidence and you put it together and you want to tell the truth about what happened, you found the skullduggery, you found the cheating, you would lose your job immediately. The truth be damned. Well, the rest of us kind of live in that world too. Go in and give your opinion about something. And if it's not politically correct, see how long you have your job. Right? Go out in the world somewhere and say something that is not considered proper, or not putting yourself down enough, or putting your group down enough, or whatever it is. Go out there and try it and see how long you get to keep your job. See how you get to not be ostracized by those around you, driven out, losing friends, people backing away from you. This, my friends, is the unfortunate reality that we are going to have to deal with going forward. If we're going to fix any of this, we have to understand where we live. Where we live. What is the truth about our existence? What's the truth about America in this year and as we go forward to a new year very, very soon? Can we make it better? I think we can. We need patriots to do it. Are you a patriot? Are you a true patriot? This is a question each and every one of us has to ask as we seek justice, as we seek truth going down the road. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. And I'm telling you, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. God bless America.